This is Behind the Docs, the show that shines a spotlight on the people shaping how we understand and use technology. In each episode, we pull back the curtain to talk about what it's really like to create the docs we all rely on. Let's dive in.
Hi, hello. Welcome to Behind the Docs, Manny. It's so good to see you.
It's so great to be here, Ren. Thank you for having me.
So what's going on in your world? Like, what's exciting right now?
There is a lot exciting right now. So my side project, Doc Detective, which is an open source documentation toolkit for programmatically testing your content, validating that procedures are accurate. I had a new version come out recently that...
Congrats.
Thank you. And I am officially working on building out support for Ditta. It is in the works. It's not available yet, but Ditta is going to be a first-class component for Doc Detective, along with other markup formats that we already support. There's a lot of other fun stuff going on behind the scenes, but being able to honestly take a step back from all the conference season and focus more on the development of all of that is great. Also, I had my book come out.
Oh, congrats. I did see that.
Thank you. Very excited about that.
Super. I'm really curious because I know you're a Markdown guy.
Yeah.
What brought you to decide to support Ditta?
Well, so the intent of Doc Detective is to help every technical writer be confident in their docs. Every technical writer should know that their procedures are accurate. It doesn't matter what format you're writing in. I've said it many times, and I will go on the record happily one more time to say it, that there is no best tool. There's only the tool that's best for your business requirements and for your skill set. And so I want to help everyone. And if you're doing a docs as code setup with Markdown or ASCII doc, or you're really ambitious and doing Ditta with Ditta OT directly, then cool, I want to help you in your docs as code flows. If you have your content somewhere else, I want to be able to help you regardless what toolkit you're using. So yeah, Ditta was a natural choice for one of the next tools to adopt.
Amazing. And so tell me, if I'm a technical writer and I'm interested in Doc Detective,
yes,
what does that do for me?
Doc Detective lets you take your procedures and literally test them against your product. So, for example, if you have a procedure that says open DuckDuckGo, type kittens, press enter, and see the search results. If you're looking that from a markup perspective, there is a hyperlink for going to DuckDuckGo prepended by a keyword open. It's like, okay, Doc Detective can see that and say, oh, it's a hyperlink that actually says we need to do something with it. Let me spin up a web browser and go there. So it will spin up a web browser and navigate to DuckDuckGo. Then next, it will decipher, oh, type kittens. And because kittens is using whatever syntax you use for literal text and it's prepended by type, and again, another keyword, Doc Detective says, cool, I'm going to type in kittens in the search box. And so it will type in kittens and then press enter. It does the same thing. It presses the enter key.
Wow.
And then for the search results, that might be represented by a screenshot. And so suppose that you have an image anchor with a screenshot class on it. Then Doc Detective can pick that up and automatically capture a screenshot of the web browser that's open. And if it's already done that before, like if you've run the test previously, it will compare the new screenshot to the old screenshot visually, pixel by pixel, and do visual regression testing to let you know if the screenshot changed too much. Like if a design changed out from under
you,
so that you can investigate why it changed, and it's already captured the new screenshot for you, so you don't have to go back and update it manually.
That's incredible.
And that's just UIs. If you have API-based procedures, it can make your API calls. It can integrate with your OpenAPI documents. And so you can test all of your API flows. If you have command line tools, you can test those. You can run them directly with Doc Detective and monitor the outputs for very success criteria, monitor the exit codes or whatever it is that you define success as. And even if you have code examples, like if you have SDK documentation, then you can extract the code from your documentation source content and run it to make sure that it runs as written.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. So where did this come from? Like, I mean, I can make my guesses, but like, what? Tell me the moment that you were like, I need this thing.
It was a 2-part process.
Okay.
The first part was back when I was working at a larger organization. I had a guide that I knew was right, because before I published it, I stepped through every single step in the procedure myself. And I hit publish knowing with full certainty it was 100% accurate. 3 months later, a customer report came in saying that the guide was broken. And I said, that can't be. It's still literally the same commit when I published it. Well, it turns out that a very nuanced behavior of the API changed, and it indeed broke the guide. And when I went to go talk to my engineers about it, I asked, hey, why did you do this? That's a breaking change. And they said, no, that's a bug fix. That was an unintended behavior before. We fixed it. And I was like, no, you changed the behavior of the product. That's bad. Which, by the way, they did revert it in the end. But, you know, talking about all of this, I was like, hey, engineer friends, you've got all your cool testing tools. You've got your integration tests, your unit tests, all this fun stuff to make sure that your code doesn't break unexpectedly. What do I have for my docs? And they said, Manny, that's why we have you here. I had a few choice expletives for them. but I didn't know what to do about it immediately. Eventually, it got to the point where I was on paternity leave for the youngest of my kids.
And another congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I was doing sleep training for the middle one. For those of you who may not know, that means I wasn't getting any sleep. And I was having to do lots of comforting in 5-minute increments in the dead of night where there was lots of screaming. And
from the child,
from
not
the
you.
Child, not me.
Okay.
I mean, I was losing my mind.
Just clarify.
Because I couldn't read anything. I couldn't listen to a podcast or an audiobook because there was, one, a lot of screaming. I was being interrupted every 5 minutes, so I couldn't do anything that required serious synchronous thought. So in my questionably sane haze, I decided to crack open my laptop and take a crack at this broken docs problem. And working in 5-minute increments over the course of 5 weeks, I created the MVP of Doc Detective.
Wow.
So that's my garage workshop story. But it really, that was about 3.5 years ago now. And it has taken on a life of its own since then. There's so much that it can do. It's been through multiple major revisions. But frankly, more importantly than all that, it gave rise to docs as tests, which is what my book is about. But the whole idea being that if you look at docs as code, really that whole strategy is about adopting engineering tooling and processes and applying it to documentation. But it's not all of engineering. Docs as code is really about the infrastructure. Whereas if you look at like docs observability, that's taking observability tools from engineering and applying them to Doc Detective. Docs as product, taking product methodologies and development methodologies and applying them to documentation. Docs as tests does the same thing. It takes engineering's testing methodologies and it doesn't directly apply them, but it adapts them to documentation.
Yeah.
And so there are other tools out there other than Doc Detective that can be used for docs as tests. But again, this is about helping everyone be confident. And again, there is no best tool. So it obviously I'm passionate about this, but I mean it very seriously. There are a lot of tools out there that can help people make sure that their content is accurate so they catch issues before their users do, so they can build user trust instead of burn user trust and cause user churn. But I'm here trying to make the best one out there.
Oh, I love it. You're doing a great job as far as I can tell so far. And I have followed you since we met at Convex, and I've just been blown away by everything that you're bringing to the industry. So I'm super excited for where you're going to go. My last question for you.
Yes.
What documentation hill would you die on?
No FAQs.
Whoa, controversial. Tell me more.
To me, FAQs, unless they are literally programmatically validated to be frequent, are misnomers. They are, in most cases, frequently asked questions are just questions that were not answered properly or surfaced properly elsewhere in the documentation. And it's a findability problem, not a, and ultimately a content management problem. Now, I've already given a couple of qualifications. I'll give one more, but single sourcing and content duplication is a big problem with FAQs too. It is so easy for them to go stale. And unless you have a sophisticated way of, one, making sure that the frequently asked questions are actually frequent, and two, single sourcing the content so that you're not actually duplicating your efforts and making some part of your documentation fragile, I think they're a pretty bad idea.
That's incredible. I think this might be my favorite answer so far, and I've asked it a couple of times. So thank you so much. This was wonderful.
My pleasure.
Awesome. We'll have you on again soon, and we'll do a long form so that way we can get really, really deep into the rest of this.
Looking forward to it, Ren.
Thank you so much, Manny.
Thanks.
Let's start with your name and what you're doing here at LavaCon.
I'm Hannah Kirk. I am here because I'm speaking. And I also really like LavaCon because it's such a fun conference.
Absolutely. So what is your talk about?
It's about docs as code, DITA, and unstructured authoring. Well, actually, it's unstructured and structured authoring. And I'm talking about, at a high level, what are all the different options that you have as a technical writer? Mm-hmm. My goal is to give people who haven't really done this before a very broad, high-level overview of the landscape and the things you must think about from my lessons learned, because I have tried it and I have failed a few times and, you know, learn some things, right? That's how you fail forward, is you learn and you grow. So I want to share those learnings with people. I want to help people not have shiny object syndrome where they're like, ooh, the new thing is docs as code. We should totally do that, you guys. And be like, well, maybe, but also maybe not. You know, there are some caveats. So
yeah,
just being aware.
That's amazing. And I love that even with, you know, all the talk and like all the excitement around AI, like we still need those foundational conversations.
Yeah.
Because there's new people in this industry every single day. I've heard a lot of people say this in the last couple of days is like, you know, even though they've heard a lot of these talks before, they know a lot of the concepts, there's always a nugget.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been a nugget for you so far?
Yes, actually, I will say the very, very, very first talk was about a woman. It was this woman at Salesforce who's the CEO said, we're going to lay off 8,000 content professionals because of AI. And they were like, no thanks. And then they basically got their act together and they became such amazing early adopters of AI, looking at their like just ways that they could solve problems with AI, with content. And ended up sort of saving themselves. And it was an amazing story. I was like, oh, strategic alignment. It was a good reminder of the agency that we have in this job. And I think if we can position ourselves right as technical writers, it's very possible we could be invaluable and indispensable because all LLMs are based on content.
Yeah.
So if we can figure out how to make ourselves more valuable and show that, damn, we are actually the most important people in your company, which I would love, that's my dream, then, you know, that would be an amazing thing. So just seeing that as an inspirational story was extremely encouraging.
Amazing.
And just reminded me that there is agency and figure it out.
Yeah. I feel like I was having a conversation about this yesterday where it feels like AI has, like, we've been saying this stuff for years and years and years and years, but suddenly because AI has become the forefront and the focus of every business, it's like all of a sudden they're realizing all of the content needs that mm-hmm. we've been talking about forever. And so it feels like there's an invigoration kind of on the horizon. I can imagine in a couple of years where the tech docs teams are going to be much more prominent in organizations because of their ability to unlock some of the functionality in AI.
I sure hope so. I mean, I think it's going to come down to like personality types, like who's getting into content, right? Like traditionally, technical writers have been happy to sit back and kind of just, I mean, most of them, many of them, I mean,
right.
Yeah, we don't get credibility, but like it's lovely not to have to like be on call and work like 24 hours a day, even like sometimes, right?
And be responsible when things go wrong.
Absolutely. So it's, but as a result, like we're not necessarily the people that are going to like be like, excuse me, CEO, I want to tell you how important I am, right?
Yeah.
It's just not kind of our personality type. So we're going to have to get some people in content who are able to do that well, right? Who are able to position us and be like, hey, people at the top, look how badass and valuable we are. We're the best. And here's the five reasons why or whatever, the data to show it. But I think we're moving in that direction. I hope we are. Because I don't see the young technical writers, although not that I know that many of them, but the younger technical writers being as fuddy-duddy, if you will. Pardon me to all the older technical writers out there. But you know.
Hannah's words, not ours.
Yeah.
But my last question is when I ask everyone who's on Behind the Docs is, what is your documentation hill that you would die on?
Don't ever get a tool or invest in a structure without understanding what will happen to you downstream. That's just my number one takeaway.
Yeah, that's a great takeaway. Absolutely. We say that, like, you know, a hammer can build a house, but it can also just sit there. You know, like a hammer is a great tool, but you got to know how to use it. And you got to know what it's for.
You can also use it to, like, take down a house.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So absolutely. You got to have your strategy in place before you the tool should come secondary to the strategy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as a tool vendor, I stand by that.
Yeah. Okay. That's the hill I'm going to die on, that one.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Okay. So tell me your name and why you're here.
My name is Sophia Minez. I'm at LavaCon for my talk on rethinking content metrics during the time of AI, which people are often struggling with because people are used to measuring success or the count using the traditional ways or in the traditional system. Everywhere AI is being seen, but people really don't know what that means and what success means in it. So I'm trying to show a way to showcase what the implementation of AI could bring in and how to show that success to leadership. Yeah. So that's what my talk is going to be. That's why I'm here.
How are you feeling about it so far?
It's great energy. I love the energy and people, like-minded people sharing ideas and getting empowered and motivated by each other and also learn from each other about their journey, struggles and what's not. So it's like a power-packed course for entire content strategists and content creators is what I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you and I originally met because we did a help site assessment and I haven't talked to you since.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit what happened after the assessment.
So with your assessment, there were lots of insight that we could really make use of. For example, it was about usability, findability, which was major concern. And it was also around the website presentation itself. Ever since we spoke, the website presentation has been changed drastically in a way that the user navigation is so much easier. Now we have user persona based on the product usage. So the way the website changed is every customer has a different product requirement and they are not interested in another service. They exclusively want to learn about a specific service. Earlier it was all, you know, mixed up together. Right. And now we have dedicated tabs for each of the product line, easy to scan. We also have an AI search, which takes natural language queries from you and gives answer based on your queries. So the superpower of this AI is, which is GPT powered, the latest version of GPT powered, is that it gives you the answer if you give certain context. For example, if the developer asks a question from a developer perspective, the answer would be that.
Awesome.
Task-based. And if a marketing professional wants to write a blog and ask a question in that way, the answer would be that way. So this reduces a lot of resource dependency. And for example, marketing would have to talk to engineers and get information for product management and whatnot. All of those dependencies are now cut down by making the content available for them and giving them information the way they want to. So that's a massive change. And again, going back to metrics, we also measured the success and it's been fantastic. The result has been fantastic.
Awesome, I'm so glad to hear that. Was there anything in the assessment that surprised you or that really like resonated with the team?
It was findability. You had really hard time finding the information that you wanted and it was navigation issue, the left menu, right menu and whatnot, even though the information was there, unless you know about the product and the components of product and the content, then only you can find the information. For someone new, it was so hard.
Yeah.
So that insight coming from a completely a new to the product and the website person was really enlightening and
yeah.
made a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why we do that, because when you're in it day to day, it's really hard to see it from a fresh perspective
yeah.
and from a newcomer's perspective.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
that's why I love doing assessments, because
yeah,
I think it just offers a really like objective lens
mm-hmm.
that people don't get very often.
Yeah, totally, totally. Because, you know, product is always asking for content. There are lots of content gap and there's resource crunch all the time in across all the technical writing teams. So your focus goes on the low-lying fruits and content requirement becomes one. So you forget about whether it can be, you know, it can be easily accessible for everyone. Those questions are kept for later until someone says and it comes and tells, you know what, even though you have content, it's not usable. Then what's the whole point of having content?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were talking about metrics. What are mm-hmm. some of the like top metrics that you're seeing that are really resonating with executives?
Time to value, customer retention. For example, everyone wants to get answers so quickly. No one wants to talk to humans anymore. So support questions, going through Jira and then getting assigned, not the business case anymore. So when customers or users or developers get their answers quickly, when the time to value is cut short, that percentage increase is something really valuable for the organization. Another one is customer retention, which comes through ongoing usages and support questions and also onboarding. If that time and effort is also being brought down by content, especially through AI, which is everyone's demand these days, that also gets great support and investment opportunities from the executives. So those two, and then business correlation, right? What business area is it helping? This content is helping with the sales of this or with the onboarding of this service or something like that. Business correlation is also another point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So stepping back a little bit,
mm-hmm.
If we talk a lot about how the technical writing space is, it's aging, right? There's not
yeah.
a lot of new faces coming
mm-hmm.
into this industry very
mm-hmm.
often. And so if someone was listening to this podcast and they
yeah.
were like, I'm interested in technical writing,
mm-hmm.
what is the advice that you would give them in terms of like getting into technical writing, if it's the right move for them, like anything that you would say to someone who might be interested?
I wouldn't say technical writer is a term usually people use to just focus on writing content. I want to shift the perspective from that to subject matter expert, who is also thinking about the product first, and then user, and then content. And always understand the content that you are writing, unlike earlier days where the content would just sit in pages, people would browse through. Now the game has completely changed with AI. Your content is what powers the AI engine. So you have to understand your content should be accurate, up to date. So diversify your portfolio, talk to product as much as you can, and make sure you know the customers, you know their requirements, you know their needs, you know their journey, and you are giving content as required for all of those use cases. So your role is now beyond just writing. Your role is more of a content strategist, content designer, information architect. So instead of focusing on writing, focus on all other aspects of writing, which would power the AI engine, is what I would say. In single word, diversify your portfolio.
I love it. I love it. That's
yeah.
a great one.
Yeah.
So last question that I ask everyone who comes on Behind the Docs,
mm-hmm.
what is the doc hill you would die on?
One thing is, never take writers lightly. That's something that I would always say. Writers will have to understand their superpower more than ever. You are the one writing content for AI systems. All of the AI systems that exist today is of no use if there are no content to power them. Who writes the content? Writers write the content. So know your power, own it, get a seat at any table that you are on.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan. It's always nice to chat.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon.
So Naz, it's so nice to see you again. You just finished your panel about AI. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. It went really well. There was one kind of key little nugget I didn't get in there. We were talking about agentic AI, and I didn't say that one of the benefits of creating little agents is it gives you a little digital neck to choke when something goes wrong.
That's very nice. Everyone needs an outlet, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you got to identify where the problem's coming from.
Yeah. So based on the questions that you heard in there, like, what do you think people are most interested in? Where do you think people need more education maybe?
Well, the panel itself was pretty active and we didn't get a lot of audience questions, but the ones we did get were talking about how do you set up process? So it's one thing to set up all the agents and one thing to set up all the content so it's ready for the agents. But how do you define the workflow that these agents are participating in? If I have an AI, when do I use AI? When do I use a human? When do I use a regular database? And breaking down that process and figuring out the answers to those questions is really fundamental to being successful.
Yeah. How where do you start if that's the case? If you could give one nugget to help people get started on that journey, what would you say?
Identify clear, small, high value use cases. So the worst practice we're seeing and the most common practice are unfortunately the same, which is I'm going to take an LLM off the shelf. I'm going to chuck a bunch of PDFs and web pages at it. And then it's going to work. So that is very frustrating to watch. It's exactly what the AI companies are selling, and it's the opposite of what actually works in the real world. So what works in the real world is identifying a small use case, configuring an AI so that it understands the context of that use case, it understands the workflow involved, it understands its role in relation to other humans, and other systems, and then it has the appropriately structured knowledge to do its job. So that's the, choose yourself off a well-defined problem, and then you can configure an AI that has a proper role. I say it's like onboarding a new resource.
Right.
You wouldn't say, hey, welcome to the company, get to work.
Exactly.
What am I supposed to do? What databases do I have access to? When do I fall over and contact somebody else? They have to know their place in the world.
Yeah.
And structuring that properly, that will help you get more focused.
Give your AI KPIs.
Yeah.
Okay. Amazing. Yeah. I love that. All right.
And tools and references.
Right.
And exactly. An onboarding short, quick start guide.
I love that. So, you've been talking about AI a lot. What is the next thing that you're getting interested in terms of AI or in terms of technology? Is there something on the horizon for you?
Knowledge graphs. So I'm all about the knowledge graphs lately. So Gartner, in a recent paper, I think it was last year, which is like a century in AI terms. So Gartner, they have this impact radar for technologies.
Yes.
And so there's how important it is and how immediate it is. So the center of the circle, it looks like a bullseye.
Yes.
So the center of the bullseye had only got two technologies last year, and both were considered highly impactful and very critical or something like that. So top rating and in the center. One was, of course, generative AI.
Yep.
The other was knowledge graphs.
Got it.
Everybody's talking about generative AI. Nobody's talking about knowledge graphs. So yeah. There's a mismatch there.
Uh-huh.
And so what the knowledge graph is, it's a type of database purpose-built to structure knowledge and information in a way that generative AIs find really easy to digest access. They have tests where they have AIs calling a regular database, not even a bunch of PDFs, but actually having a database.
Right.
And asking them questions. And for complex questions with complex answers, you're getting 0% success rate. For complex questions with simple answers, 0% success rate. And then with a knowledge graph, they do the same things. And then from zero, you're jumping up to 37.
Oh.
Or 30, 35.
Significant.
Infinite.
Yeah.
Infinitely better than zero.
Right.
So is it up to snuff yet? No. But it's hugely better. And then for simpler questions and simpler answers, then you're going from in the 40s up to the 70s and so on. So it's vastly better for driving AI solutions, but it's like the it's the secret of the tech giants. Google has a knowledge graph. IKEA has three. Netflix has like says that theirs is worth $1 billion a year. And so I think knowledge graphs are the next frontier that we need to address.
Got it. You think people are like jumping too far into AI too fast, mm-hmm. and then we're going to have like a pullback where people are realizing, oh, we need to get this groundwork done first.
Yeah. There was a great comparison on the panel. I think it was, I don't remember who said it, but he said it's kind of like when search came out. Mm-hmm. We said, oh, well, now search is here. So we don't have to worry about navigation. We can just... the search engine will just find the right stuff and it will get to the top. And then we said, oh no, actually there's a lot of work in terms of preparing the data, tuning the engine, configuring it, training it to get the right things to actually show up at the top. Same thing with AI.
Yeah.
We thought what's on sale right now is magic wands for everyone. All the big vendors go out there and go, finally, no more thinking, no more structuring our content, just chuck garbage at us and wonders will come out. And that's absolutely not true. And so we have to go through that same learning cycle of it's not a magic wand. And we do have to do quite a lot of work to set up the environment around the AI.
Yeah.
I like to say it says on the tin, large language model, not large database model. It's not a database. It will never be a database.
Right.
It can't keep facts straight. It can't do math. It does language.
Right.
And so making sure that your language model is a thin little layer over all your other backend systems.
That makes total sense. Thank you so much. So I have one last question for you. What is the documentation hill you're willing to die on?
Oh, wow. That the we should be focusing on helping humans do better. Not helping do more. Value, not volume. So use these tools to see how you can 10x your productivity, not cut 50% off your costs or your time. The obsession is, now we can automate cheaper, faster, 10,000 deliverables a month, as opposed to going, well, how do we use this to focus on the things that are working and make those even better? So we can deliver less, but do 10 times as much good.
Amen. Love that. Thank you so much, Naz.
My pleasure.
Okay.
They're adorable.
Aren't
they're
they
like
cute?
Little animal ones. Like,
I know. I love
have
them.
Have you seen the tiny microphone with the animals?
Yes, and then they like make animal noises into the microphone. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh. Well, if you couldn't already tell, we're here with Kat Ryerson from DocuSign. No shot callers in sight.
Oh, gosh.
Nope. But you did do a workshop yesterday about AI. How'd it go?
I did. It was phenomenal. I can't say that I did much myself, except for encourage people to talk about their frustrations. But it was really cathartic because we all kind of swapped ideas on AI challenges we're experiencing.
Okay, so based on all the like different sessions you've seen today, what are some of the things that you picked up? What are your nuggets? Everyone keeps talking about how... like, even if the conversation is something they've heard before, or something they've done before, there's always a nugget. So is there a nugget that stands out for you today?
There have been a lot of really good nuggets. Mm. And a lot of it is really that your content has to be ready before the AI, before it can be used and ingested. And to what degree do we need to be structuring it? And in what model? You know, is it data? Are we doing RAG graphs? What are we doing here? So really the theme I'm seeing is we need to go back to the basics. Before we can fly with AI, we have to have taxonomy, we have to have structure, and if you don't do that first, you're just putting garbage in and you're going to get garbage out.
Yeah. I mean, how long have we been saying that, garbage in, garbage out?
Why is it AI? Why is it the revolution of AI that's making it the big ticket item again?
Honestly, I like, if I had to actually think about it, I feel like AI has now become a household thing. And so people are thinking about it more. Companies are talking about it more.
True.
And then the more and more they use it without having all of the structured content behind the scenes, the more it's hallucinating, the more like bad things are coming out of it, like incorrect information's coming
yes.
out. And so they're having to say, wait, why is that happening? And then they have to get educated on it.
Oh, you just reminded me. Okay. So people keep talking about AI hallucinating.
Uh-huh.
What about humans? We hallucinate. I have given users documentation and watched them hallucinate something that, and we don't call it a hallucination when it's right. people, right?
Right.
We say, oh, it's you either a user that. Error or it's the technical writer's error for not documenting it well enough. That's all hallucination is.
Yep.
Humans do it too. AI's just doing it a little scarier.
Fair. But also, like, what a great way, like, if AI is not understanding your documentation the way that you
want
to. Humans
aren't going to either.
Humans aren't.
If you can document something well enough that AI understands it, you're documenting it so that a human can understand it.
Yeah.
AI actually needs more context than humans because we all have knowledge in our head that helps us ground these ideas when we read them. But you need to pull that context out and give that to the AI. So it's even, I think talking to AI and educating AI is even more complex than just talking to another human being.
I agree, because you, like, human beings can connect dots and have other logic and experiences to pull from. And I think people just genuinely forget that it is literally just a predictive mechanism that's saying this is the next word that is going to be
what's most likely to come next.
Exactly. And so then, but like, I mean, I get it. It's smart. And so then you start thinking, oh, this thing is really smart, but actually it's real dumb.
yes, it really is. I'm not going to tell AI that. I still say please and thank you.
Me too. But then I read that there was a whole article. It just wastes more water.
Water wasting, and I'm like, well, that's terrible. I'm trying to be eco friendly over here and not use
plastic.
Oh my gosh.
We're all trying to be nice for when they turn on us eventually.
I think I'm going to have to say no to that one. I'm going to still say please and thank you.
Yeah, same. Okay, so last question.
Yeah.
If someone is considering LavaCon and their like upper management's not taking the bait or not letting them come, what is something that they could tell them? Like, what's a way that they could pitch LavaCon?
Well, my first, and this is what I have to do, speak. Try to speak. That's the big thing. Because if I can show that, hey, I'm doing effort. I may be getting our company's name out there in the leadership world or the content world. That helps with the cost and like attendance a lot of times. And even sometimes if people are scared, I don't think they understand that they can find someone to partner with too.
Yeah.
And that can give you a little bit of a discount, and that helps you get involved a little more. People see you're a speaker and get in. But at the other side of things, you know, if you're struggling to show value of LavaCon, I'd go and pull some of the names of the people presenting.
And the companies they work for.
We had a keynote speaker from Salesforce, and she had such enlightening things and like actionable items that I can take back to my team and go, hey, Salesforce is doing this. And companies do that, especially in the technology world. It's like, we want to know what other people are doing.
Absolutely.
And we look up to Salesforce and Google, and Jack brings those people in. So this is where you can get that thought leadership.
Great answer. Thank you so much, Kat.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Docs, where the content's structured, but the conversations aren't. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share it with someone who loves great documentation as much as we do. Until next time, keep creating content that makes a difference.